Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Clayton McKinnon, and I'm a deacon in the Carnegie Baptist Church. I'm also a detoxified therapeutic runner. Knock that down in English into sober drunk or recovering alcoholic. I am the MC for the chairman of UND tonight. I'm very proud to be a part of it. Yeah, this is a big celebration of the Custis group. The member of AA and Custis has the longest year of sobriety, 19, right? And it's a happy occasion to be here tonight and welcome all the friends around. I tell you, it looks good. Good to see old Sam back there. I haven't seen him in a long time. He's right where he ought to be. And good to see everybody. You know, it's just great to see so many sober people in one group. You know, you go most anywhere in the world, you can't find this many sober people in a crowd this large. Somebody's going to be booed. This is it. AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship for men and women who share their spirit, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any cause. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is late tonight. I'm going to ask Robbie to will come up here and read how it works.
Hi, everybody. My name is Robbie Williams, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm so glad to be here sober tonight. And I'm only here because of the grace of God in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so grateful to be here to help the sweetest gal I know celebrate her 19th birthday. She's meant an awful lot to me over the years with her encouraging words and her wisdom. She's helped me through a lot. Happy birthday. How it works. Portion of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. They are such unfortunate. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. They are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we fought. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrong. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, may direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Many of us exclaim, "What an order. I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We're not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear 3 pertinent ideas: that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own life; that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism; that God could and would if he desired.
Thank you, Robbie. All right, let's see. Judy, come up here and read the 12th edition.
I wouldn't have had that thing up here if I'd have known I was going to be fine. I'd be scared if I'm coming.
I'm wondering if you'd be fine.
I followed me. I am Judy Wolf, and I am an alcoholic. I'm awfully thankful I made this be here to celebrate the occasion of June's 19th birthday, and I'm so thankful to all of y'all and to God for my surprise. The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2, for our group purpose has but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise as problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9AA itself shall never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10 Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11 Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. 12 Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you, Judah. You know, I'm sort of nervous tonight. I guess I better explain to you why. Don't many of you know Pat from up at lunch like I do, a lot of these others. About a month ago, she don't care what she said. About a month ago, I was up at Kansas College at the beauty pageant. And I was sitting right in the aisle, right next to the aisle, Ruth next to me. I got up at intermission and walked back to the back room and was standing up stretching. After a little, I come back down and Patty was sitting in my chair. She jumped up and she turned around and said, "Hey, I want you to meet this gal here." I said, "I want you to date her." And I thought, well, that's not so bad. Now, let me tell you something. In a few minutes, here she come walking up the aisle with the president of the college. She snatched me up and introduced me to the Mr. Dr. Murphy. I knew the man, but she told him, says, "I'm trying to get him to date her, so don't you think they'd make a nice couple?" Well, that was all right, and I says, "I see June here tonight." And she started. And she talked about June. And says, "You know, you don't know why June started drinking, do you?" I said, "No, I never had. I wondered how come her ever started drinking." She says, "It was Aunt Martha. Aunt Martha just drank all the time." And says, "June just got to drinking and couldn't stop. Aunt Martha did, and June couldn't stop." Well, I didn't know her. She walked in here. There's no telling what Patty would say. But it's good to have Aunt Martha and Carl. And Martha's relative, family. It's just good to have you all with us tonight. You know, the man that's going to talk to us tonight, I've been watching him for several years. And for the past 6 months, it just looks like that he found what he'd been looking for. And everybody needs an introduction. When they stay sober a long time, then they get up here to talk, share their experience, strength, and hope with us. Yeah, they need an introduction. And I like this guy. He's just my kind of AA. He's been a great inspiration to me. And every Monday night, I look down that door. I know he's going to walk in that door. So without taking up any more of his time, I'm going to give you Ray D. from Newport.
I'm Ray Black and I'm an alcoholic. I'm nervous too. How y'all? You know, I tell you, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to stand up here and talk to you folks and have June invite me to be part of a celebration for another milestone in her life's progress. The old country boy of Barber County sure has gone to full peace. I also was thinking when these two other guys, you know, when I first came into this program, I had a kind of an idea about these drunk women. I just didn't see how I could ever associate or be connected with a drunk woman. Now, it just wasn't any two ways looking at that thing. Since I've been in this area, it looks like me and women got more to do with men than men folks have. I've got two or three of my so-called sponsors too, and two or three of them are sponsoring me at the same time, I reckon, Clayton. Hey. I know when Robert got up to him. I know when I first started going to AO with New Farm. I think all these hard sales about giving up hope on him. You know that gal with a couple more men at different times scared me safe for a Georgia squash. Judy got up to him. God sent her up now down there to help her, but she don't know how much she helped up. And then this wonderful lady, June. I used to come in here and sit down. I remember about the first two or three times I came in here, I couldn't see straight in, but I didn't know nothing about it. So I used to start noticing June, a cute little old girl sitting down there by the front row. You know how you form ideas when you come in the age. I used to kind of place her, whose wife is that? And you come on some kind of way, it just never did come out of it. Finally, somebody told me she was an alcoholic, and I didn't do it. She's been a wonderful inspiration to me. By the way, I finally figured out that thing. You know I'm kind of slow about a lot of things. June was kind enough here far back to ask me to be her sponsor. And I figured that thing out after a long time. Now, June had been noticing me, I reckon. She knew I was having a hard time on this program. She thought to herself, now, you know, if I ask him to be my sponsor, I can help him. And she did. And she's been helping me ever since. And I appreciate it. Clarence, I had a good joke I was going to tell some night, but I just about fit you an old crybaby down, huh? But old Clayton told me last week, they already told this group, bunch y'all had down there about an old hound dog named Red and the Baptist preacher, so I can't tell that. Huh? Well, I got two, though. I figured up another in the meantime. I'll tell this one first. This old man down here in South Georgia had this hound dog. His wife had left him, and all his children were gone. And that's all that boy had in this world. Name Red. And he and Red were crazy about each other. So, sometime old Red passed on, and fellow decided, now, something's got to happen, you know. I can't just go out there and dig a hole in the ground and put old Red in there without some kind of kind words. I just got to have me some proper words, said old Red. But, so he went to see this Baptist priest. Told him the tale. Everybody was after me, you know, and he didn't have anybody but Red, and Red was gone, and he just had some proper, he just felt like he had to have some proper words said over his body. He had him out there in the pickup truck before he put him in the ground. So the pastor preacher said, look, my friend, I sure would like to help you out. You know, I'm in a life-saving business, a human being. I just don't think it'd be right for me to get out there and preach a funeral for a dog. There's something just don't sit too well. They talked a little while along. He said, by the way, now, I have a fellow down the road down here, another preacher. Go down there and try him. Say he might be able to help you out. The old farmer, he said, well, I appreciate all the kindness, but I reckon I just have to leave and turn around and go leave. And he said, by the way, you know, I saved up $50 to have somebody preach this dog's funeral. And just about opening the door back there, and the old Baptist preacher said, wait a minute there, brother. You didn't tell me that dog was a Baptist. I had another one I heard too. This one kind of tickled my friend going showing up. Now, this about old black boy down in South Georgia named Leroy. Leroy was at that age when they were drafting back down to go to Vietnam. Sure enough, they drafted him, sent him off to boot camp, and Got him all ready to be a soldier. Send him to Vietnam. And he's a good soldier. He did everything his non-commissioned officers also told him to do. But he got out in his first battle. The bullets were zipping and the cannons were blowing and the bombs were falling and all this stuff then. And somebody yelled up, "Hey, Leroy! Gas him!" So he run up three of them and got, bam, zap, got it. So he came to the hospital, put himself a pot on his wounds, and wrapped him up and got him all ready. A couple of weeks, came back up there. Same thing happened. So Viet Cong over there. "Hey, Leroy! Gas him!" Bam, zap, got him here. So he wanted to get on back to the hospital, you know. He got in there and they sewed him up and patched him up and he thought Lee said, "Wait a minute here, doctor man." He says, "You know something wrong with this MD." I said, "What's that, Leroy?" He says, "I've been over here trying to be a good soldier and doing everything you folks tell me to do. And I've been doing everything my sergeant tell me to do. But some of those folks over here on that other side, they know me." I said, "How is that, Leroy?" So they keep calling my name. I said, "Don't worry about that. They're ready to give a little psychology on you. So tell you what you do, Leroy. Now you fix them back. You get back up there this time. Instead of you letting him call you, you call them. You know, Leroy is just a common, ordinary American name, and he's Viet Cong has figured out that you call somebody's name, and they're going to sure jump up and get him. So you just think you got a good, common Viet Cong name. The next time you get up there, you call him. When he raises up in that trench, and let him have it." "Yeah, that's cool. I'm going to sure try it." He went back up there, and the doggone bullets started singing again, you know, and this and that and other. A few minutes, he said, "Well, you know, this is just about the time to try." He said, "Ray, he went for a minute. Hey, King!" Old King sitting over there. "Say, you there?" "Yes." "Oh, you came here." "Yeah, I'm here. Say, is that you, Leroy?" Bam, zap, he got him again. And that's about like an old drunk, you know, going back to that bottle again and again and again. And that's just where it happens, I suppose. I wish I had plenty of time to say before I started telling y'all about my bottle of whiskey. I want to tell you some of my thoughts about this. I ain't going to talk to you. Alice's been on my back about Jenny. She don't get on me much. She says I talk too long about my pre-drinking history. Well, and then my drinking history, and then in between and everything else. If I see a whole hand up that day, she's going to tell me to get on some other subject. I figured around, I wasn't born an alcoholic. I had a lot of good years of drinking whiskey that I enjoyed. I enjoyed parties. I know, and I'll tell you something else about my youth too. I never did have these hang-ups about not being liked by folks and take a drink, you know, and dance like Fred Astaire and all that business. I drank whiskey because I enjoyed drinking whiskey. For that reason alone, I like the way it did for me too. Well, before I get off this subject, I want to say something else about my wife, Alice. I told you all this before. You know, I started quoting Alice when she was in the ninth grade in high school, and I think I was a senior. If that's wrong, keep correcting me. And she chased me for about 5 years, and I finally called her the year I finished college and married. And that was in 1939, so y'all can see I've been married just about all my natural born babies. I used to kind of think that was funny, but let me tell you something on a serious thing. I kind of think God had my life kind of planned for me. I don't believe in predestination. But he had to have something planned along this line for me, because had it not been for this woman, I wouldn't be up there. During all my drinking days and everything else, for some reason she never gave up hope on me. She, back in the 40s, after I got out of service, she was the one who first introduced me to AA. Back there sometime between 45 and 50, I don't know the exact date. But I just didn't take this AA. I wasn't ready to sober up. I thought I was enjoying drinking. I'd get drunk, pass out, and stay out all night, and gallivant around, and everything else the drunk folks did. I wasn't doing any work. I reached that stage of my alcoholism where I just didn't work anymore. I'd lost all ambition to ever do anything. Now, when I went into service, back in October 4th. I drank some then. I'd been drunk a few times before that. But I'd say before 1940, I really didn't have a problem with alcohol. But I could take it or leave. I got out of service in February 46. And I'd built up quite a few years, months annual leave. And we'd saved up the money too. I started drinking this. I had 4 or 5 months annual leave, nothing to do, and I wasn't worried about any finances at that time. I wasn't worried about nothing but to tell you the truth. And I stayed in a state of intoxication for about 5 months. And I don't know when I crossed that line from being a compulsive drinker to a drinker just enjoyed drinking. Whether it's before this, I don't know. What was that? I don't know. And that's when, I these old timers in AA, I know a lady over there, and a lady again, see, a lady and me in alcoholism. She was a Henry Fuller. And she used to travel from New Falls to Montgomery, Alabama, hunting this probe. And she found it. And there I was, they were taking me to a meeting right in New Falls. All I had to do was go up there. That old saying, I drank, I just wanted to raise sober. And that's trouble with a lot of us who've been down this road of alcoholism. I went to some meetings there. And sometime in the late 40s, I went to my first alcoholic hospital down in Andalusia. I think I went 2 or 3 trips to Andalusia, I'm not sure. I don't know. My memory. Cells just gone, Clayton. They just ain't no more. They don't come back and like they're supposed to. I wish it would sometimes. So there's a lot of things I'm glad they don't come back for. But I went to Andalusia a couple of times, and Alice just about had all she could stand. The last trip when I came back up to Andalusia, her brothers had carried her to Birmingham for a nurse breakdown. You know me, I went up there to see what was going on. So I got up there and told this Dr. K, and he wouldn't let me see her, wouldn't let me talk to her. And I said, okay, I'll fix her, I'll get drunk about it. Which is the normal thing for a drunk to do. I got drunk and stayed in a hotel, in this hotel there in Birmingham for, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks already. I don't know how long it was, right? Maybe a week, 10 days. My father finally got hold of me and sent me to VA hospital in Tuscaloosa. I sobered up over there. I had the advantage then I could sober up pretty quickly from alcohol. Probably 2 or 3 days, I wasn't real sober, but I was a hell of a lot better off than I was when I went in there. I was able to start getting my brain operating. And I decided then I was going to quit drinking. I didn't think all that much about it. And you know I did. Quit drinking for 7 or 8 years. I didn't have a drink or a pill or a shot. By the way, I'm a whiskey drinker. I don't fool with iron. I'm scared of these doggone folks who are not scared of folks, but I'm scared of what these pills will do to me, and I'm scared of what taking dope will do to me. But I made up my mind to quit drinking whiskey and I did. Looking back on it now, I know why I was able to do it. I've filled my life doing different things to take up that time that I used to have drinking whiskey. I joined about every club in Newport. I've gotten a 3 or 4 jobs after the folks saw that I was trying to do something about my drinking. At one time I had 3 jobs I was getting paid for, and I had about 5 jobs I wasn't getting paid for. And I was running some club, or it was just, you know, another thing I did along this time too. And I want to tell you about my religious life and bring it up to this point. I was born in the church. I've always been a Christian in my opinion. And they gave me the right to get up there and say what I think. I wasn't a good Christian. But I believe in God, and I believe God is my Savior, and that's for me, and that's what's necessary. God never did let me down. I let him down. He never did forsake me at all. I tell you, I heard this fellow talking here a while back, too, but God and this man were walking down this long, sandy beach. This man was talking to God, and he said, God, you know, when I accepted you as my Savior, you told me you would always walk beside me. Well, I've been looking about there behind me. I noticed just one set of footprints sometimes. And he said, my beloved son, when you see that one set of footprints, you're looking at my footprints. That's when I was carrying you when you need somebody to carry. And that's exactly what happened to us, or what happened to me during my drinking period. If God hadn't been there, I just wouldn't be in. I'll tell you one example of it. Stayed overseas about 3 years. And this boy and I had gone overseas together back then, October 42. When we got ready to come home, we all of us had enough points to come home. The time the war was over, we started getting out and getting things ready. We were waiting to go into Japan before the war, just before we got over. And some way or other, he got on the plane. They had one plane left in Manila every day, coming back to space. Some way or other, he got on a plane one day, and my name came up for the plane next to him. And we were good friends. The boy had gone. I went to Virginia Military Institute, he went to Virginia Polytechnic Institute. We've been friends all the time. We got separated overseas, but we came back together in the middle. He took off one afternoon, and after a certain number of hours, I forgot how many it was, that plane went down, no. Nothing from it was, nobody ever heard anything from it. Now there was a young boy who had gone through a whole war over there. War was over and died coming home. I got on a plane the next day, came home, nothing's ever happened to me. Spent three years over there, never got struck. And you can't tell me God didn't have something to do with that. So there's no reason why I should be on the plane one day and he should be on that plane the next day. And he'd always take care of me. He allowed me to become an alcoholic. He certainly didn't cause me to be an alcoholic. When I stopped drinking for that period, started again in 54, 55, I've been sober about 7 or 8 years. It took me an awful long time to reach by. Now I've heard a lot of folks talk about that when they started back drinking, they immediately took up right where they left off. Well, that's not true in my case either. I drank at home in Newport for a long number of months before my wife even did. And she was about the only person I cared about. I didn't mind other folks in Newport knowing I was drinking. And finally, you know, it all catches up with her. And I'll say about 6 or 7 months, they caught up with me. And I used to pick out, I think this was about sometime in 55. And I know, I remember when I first started, I was over at Fort Stewart, Georgia, and asked for a can of beer, just like I was a Coca-Cola on a golf course or whatever. See, no one, I wasn't familiar with enough with AA to know about one drink, one drunk, like no taste. I took that beer, just like I was drinking Coca-Cola. I think I had 2 or 3 beers of that night. And no result, no other. I felt the bill just like anybody feels the bill. But as far as getting drunk, I just didn't get drunk. When my alcoholism reached that point where I finally started getting drunk, I got scared. And this was at least 8 months after I started. I never thought before that alcohol had such a hold on me as it had at this time. That's when I started this hospital route. I don't know how many hospitals I've been in. I have no idea whatsoever. I know I've been in Barber County 15, 20 times. I have friends, just like a lot of y'all have, friend doctors, you know. You get the flu or the Hong Kong flu or the German measles or something wrong with your stomach or virus or whatever you call it. If you're drunk and want to sober up, that's where they take it. And this got kind of rough on my family too, and they finally talked me into going over to Augusta, Georgia, to the Clayton Clinic over there. And don't ask me that, because I don't know. I stayed over there a few days. No folks didn't talk to me about any drinking, this and nothing. And I assumed they finally thought that I needed some shock treatment. And that was my first experience with shock treatment. And as you know, shock treatment for a drunk is no good whatsoever. I don't have anything against doctors. I know they have their place in our society. I know they do an awful lot of good work. Doctors who do not know anything about alcoholism should not have anything to do with an alcoholic. That's, of course, this is my opinion. Because they don't understand alcoholism. They certainly don't treat them in the right way. Most of them give you a big sack of pills when you leave after you've been detoxified in a hospital or whatever, and if you're alcoholic when you go in, when you get out, you'll feel okay. I heard that story from me before. It's just here later. I'm talking back about my life now, back in 60-65. And I reckon it's about the time from 60 to 70 were some of the worst bouts I ever had with alcohol. I don't know whether it was a high bottom or low bottom, what kind of drunk I was, but I was just a plain old drunk. I drank whiskey and I got drunk. I drank whiskey on sawdust piles, I drank it out of a bottle, I drank it out of a glass, I mixed with water, I chased with cigarettes. There's not an awful lot you can tell me about drinking whiskey and what it'll do for you. It got so bad, a lot of part of the 60s, you know, it's easy for other folks to see what's happening to you. But it's hard as the devil for you, because your brain's just about cooked now. And it's hard for you to realize the condition that you're getting in because of alcohol. And I didn't know this until after I sobered up and started trying to help other alcoholics. We've got a man in the car right now. He continues like he is. It's my opinion he'll be available in the next 6 or 8 months. He knows he's got a problem, but he won't accept the fact that he needs any help. He's always too busy. He's got to take care of his job. He never realized he's not going to have a damn job all life if he continues. And that's the way it is when you deal with a drunk. They just don't know it. And mine, I think I accepted the fact that I could not stay sober. I was periodic drinking. I couldn't stay sober on a permanent basis. I'd get drunk, stay drunk 2 or 3 weeks. First thing, when I started sober up, I'd go to the hospital. I went to Columbus, I went to Atlanta, I went to Augusta, Statesboro, Barber County, I went to Andalusia, to Tuskegee. And you just name it. But all I wanted was to get sober so I'd start drinking again. Whenever that period came, and it just didn't worry me all that much. Sometime in 71, I think it was. Now, by the way, I did go to AA sometime during the latter part of the 70s. My wife has never really fussed at me too much about drinking. She's been put out with me. But man, when she starts fussing, I just leave. I pack me a damn suitcase and leave and go to the motel and hold up there until the thing blew over. I go somewhere. I started saying I have enough brain left to want to quit on a permanent basis so that this would stop happening again. And I admit now, I thought I could do it then. I thought that once I could get sober and get something, that maybe I could. I lost contact with God. Even during all this period, when I was sober up, we'd go to church and I wasn't a good church member, but I'd still go to church. And that being a hypocritical lie, that's just the way it was. That's the way it is, in my opinion. So I couldn't help myself. I still had also some kind of sense of responsibility. I don't know why I kept that all my life, but I did. I clearly wasn't able to do anything about it, but it was still down inside of me someplace. When I got over to John Mooney's place, when I came out of the fog and was able to think just a little bit, I thought I'd find a solution. And that place was run on the AA principles. And the folks who worked there were AA members. And these folks showed me a kindness and a love that I had never received in any other hospital I've ever been to. I hate to say this in a way, but if it's necessary that I go through what I did for the next 2 or 3 years, it's all right with me. I had to go to state for it 4 times. And somewhere inside of me, I knew that eventually I was going to find what I was looking for. I heard this thing called once a searching disease. I didn't know what in the devil I was looking for, but I was looking for something. And now I know it was the fact of what I was looking for. I didn't realize what sobriety would mean to me during all this drinking period. First time I left over there, I bet I carried 4 or 5. I was going to sober up Baldwin County, just like a lot of us, you know, when we get our first little taste of sobriety, we're going to sober up the whole world. I carried 4 or 5 folks back to state for luckily two of them still sober. But during the difference, let me tell you something else I don't agree with, too. The folks, most alcoholics will tell you that you have to sober up for yourself. I believe this to be true to a large extent. But I also sobered up for my family and my wife. I ain't no 2 ways of me calling it. I might as well admit it, and that's the way I feel, and I think that's one reason I sobered up. I knew what it was in there. I know what my life has been since 1971. Luckily, I don't think she has seen me drunk or take a drink since 1973. And 79, now maybe 74. I don't keep up with dates, I'm sorry. And I don't intentionally tell lies. But she hasn't seen me take a drink or be drunk since either April of 73 or 74. And that's just about five or six years. And I'm very grateful for this. I've had some sobriety, but I don't have as much as a lot of folks have. I'm the main reason why I don't have it. I know how to stay sober when I want to stay sober. I like to see folks get up and have bad days. Although that's never really been a part of what I was looking for. I have reached one thing. I now live my life on a 24-hour basis. And to me, it's waking up. I haven't had a drink or a desire to have a drink in the last 24 hours. I'll tell you something else I believe about this April. Until you get it, you might as well forget about it. You have to have, first of all, a desire to stay sober. If you don't have that, you might as well forget it. I'm coming to say a problem and think you can take 1 or 2 of the steps and work them and stay sober. There's no way you can do it. I thought that. I thought that I've tried every way that I know of to continue drinking and still get the soberness that I feel at prayer time. Another thing I think about being sober. If I didn't have the serenity or whatever, now I'm talking about the way I feel, not the way y'all feel, about the way you're looking at it. If I didn't have what I think is a little bit serenity to go with this thing, it wouldn't be worth following. I may still be sober. But I certainly wouldn't have what I've got now, what I think I've got. I enjoy being sober. Well, that's another thing about when I first heard this AA program, I thought, thank God, if I was sober up, I'd be a doggone saint. There's no way that the folks can follow these 12 steps and not be a saint. And right down at the bottom of the thing, it says there's something. We don't claim the affections. We just claim spiritual promises. It's all written out. You know, he's a smart book, and there's no doubt about that book being God inspired, either. Y'all and me. I don't think most of y'all ever heard this talk before, and you heard me talk I don't know how many different times. And I just wanted to tell you exactly what was on my mind. It's about how I feel about AA, how I feel about myself. It's a wonderful feeling. I've learned so much about Ray Blackmon since I sobered up, which I didn't know before. I learned about this love thing. I feel to love and also to be loved. I learned that the feeling that you get when you try to help some poor alcoholic achieve sobriety. Knowing all the time that it's not you then, that the good Lord helped you. So we know we're kids and we think we're doing this and that and other. I've come to this conclusion. Whenever I do anything, I do it with God's approval and with his help. I used to think back, I tell you one couple of things, the way I felt about things too, when I was younger. I had a good young life. I was a good Army officer, called to all my efficiency reports. They were outstanding or superior, except in 3 months and 5.5 years. And I was offered a regular Army commission when the war was over. And I turned that thing down for one reason only. I used to say I didn't want to move around in the Army, but that's not true. See, I was drinking so much whiskey then, I didn't want folks to know about it. And I didn't want that record that I had achieved so far to be finished. I came back to Powell, something in Birmingham. My old boss man up there said, well, you've been gone about 5.5 years. Go and take as much time as you want. When you get ready to go back to work, you've got a job. I never went back in that office. I had a friend of mine in Newport. He's in the lumber business. He talked to me pretty soon after the war was over. I said, Ray, when you get ready to stop here running around and drinking whiskey and having a good time, I want to set you up in business for your wholesale lumber broker. I didn't take that one. That was 3 jobs right there. Postmastership came up in New Falls. I'm a postman. I'm a rural mail carrier. When this new postal service came up over there, that said there's 2 folks in that office qualified to be postmaster, according to their education and their record. I think they wanted 4 years of college and about 5 years of ministry, I had that in Army. I turned that down because I was doing something I thought I could do, and I was still drinking. And I didn't know when I was going to get drunk again. That's 4 jobs that alcohol cost me. And I don't care whether it's 10 or 15 jobs, it doesn't make any difference. I don't think I could be any happier tonight than doing exactly what I'm doing. I'm talking to a bunch of folks I love, and I think they love me. The gratitude you get for little things like human asking me to speak at her birthday. And the other thing she's done for me, too, that after I told her she's my sponsor, too, when she knows me. She's other little small things. She's always, when you Donna saw me, the telephone rings. She's got something she wants to ask you, or something will write you a note about, she likes something you did, or some little thing, and any different presents she sends you at Christmas and your birthday and such stuff as that, that she does with her own hands. Now, I've got to reach that point in life where I appreciate these things. It's a shame that we couldn't do that back then during our drinking years, that we couldn't see what we were missing in living. It's just plain wonderful. As Clayton often says, my cup runneth over with joyfulness tonight. It's a wonderful occasion for me to be able to be a part of this celebration. I know I picked up a couple more of those things too. Now, one of them was like, I used to look at these folks who read something about being in their speeches and this and that and other. I said, that's a bunch of damn crap. I never think. It's something June gave me. And go this way. He said, let the road rise up to meet you. And may the wind always be at your back. May the sun shine brightly upon your face. And the rain fall softly upon your field. Until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray. That was beautiful. Talking about how the women, seeing women in AA when we first come in. That first meeting that I walked in here, I come down and it was segregated then. All the women sit over here and all of the men over here. I don't know why. And I saw this lady sitting down here. I said, which one's her husband? Ted says, none of them's her husband. She's an alcoholic. I said, my God, what's this world coming to? Then he said, she's got 5 years sobriety. I thought, and I said, well, now then they're all just a bunch of liars. Nobody can take sober 5 years. June's meant a lot to me, too. And about the 20th of last month, when I have a beloved member that passed away a good many years ago, see his wife here tonight, Margaret over there. We can see her back down at the meeting. Margaret had a problem with alcohol. His name was Lou. We got a birthday down in Bainbridge. I know he wants to announce it, but I'm going to announce it too. Birthday down in Bainbridge, Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. And I mean, you better get down there, because I done heard something. He said, you better catch yourself in Bainbridge, Wednesday night. They had four of them down there. They're having a convention of birthdays. Got any other now?
Clayton said night break is closed.
Anybody else got anything to say? I want to say.
Clayton John, Burma passed away this morning.
Oh?
Jim will be my attendant at 4 o'clock at Thursday
Chapel.
And his body is here at last for the room.
I know most of you remember John. He was here in AA for many, many years. You know, it's a sad thing. This morning, I heard a man, I've been trying to drop a hint to the fellow. His name was James Maynard. I've been trying to drop a hint around to him for a long time. And I heard that, it's cirrhosis of the liver. He had a problem. That's just what this old alcohol can do to you. Any other announcement? Anybody else got anything to say? I'm going to ask our other lady member, one of our other lady members, to come up and give out the chip, Martha.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. My name is Martha Richardson, and I am an alcoholic. Happy birthday, little fox. I'm sorry we was late, but my people's retarded. In our group, we have the tip system, and I'm like a Lamar now. Sometimes this thing, I get it kind of messed up. See, all this bad reason. And it's just to play a little poker chip. And if there is anybody here that thinks they have a problem, we offer them a white chip. And it also serves a dual purpose. If you decide you're going to get drunk, you go out and do get drunk, we ask you to break it and come on back, and we'll give you another one. You keep this in your pocket and try to stay sober for 3 months, and you earn your red chip. 3 more months, you get your blue chip. 3 more months, you get your amber, and at the end of the year, you've earned your medallion, and we get you a birthday cake and coffee and a bunch of junk to go with it. Have we got anybody tonight for the first time that would like a white chip? I'll bring it to you. A retread.
I'll
do we have anybody for a red one? A blue one? Amber. Think Alice needs this one. Do we have anybody for one year sobriety? 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. Come on up here, Barry. I can't miss with these two wonderful sponsors. And those two beautiful pigeons are keeping it straight. One straightened me out this morning. I don't know how you go about thanking people. Not only for saving your life, but showing you a way to live it. If that's what you've done, and I love you, and I thank God for it. And happy birthday, Mark, too. I skipped her up over there. 19 years ago tonight, she was in bad shape. Thank you.
Anything else? Oh, we have the Georgia message up there. That's one of the keys. Pick up one if you'd like to. Let us be reminded of our twelfth tradition. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personality. It is a sacred trust. We respect the anonymity of everyone present at this meeting. The opinions, thoughts, or experiences expressed by speakers or any others are their own and not necessarily those of the AA as a whole. We have coffee, and refreshments after the Lord's Prayer. Let us all stand and repeat the Lord's Prayer in unison.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, in earth that which is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.